Clipson Sports Talk with Lawton Swan.
Just call me Swanee.
Tiger style. Tiger
Finally, Clipson Sports Talk has come back to Drive Time. Hello, everybody. Lawton Swan back in the saddle. Once again, it is the show that shakes the Southland. Clipson Sports Talk for you each and every afternoon as you make your way around the great state of South Carolina and beyond, listening to us on incredible radio stations like Fox Sports Radio 1400 in the Midlands, heard around the world on the iHeartRadio application. Download it today. It is free. William Quackenbush set to join the program. We're going to have him on a little earlier than normal. We hope to be joined by Brad Owens, the director of baseball operations up at Clemson University here in hour number two. So we'll try to get both of those guys in off of a weekend that included two Clemson players being drafted in the NFL draft, a three-game sweep at the hands of the Louisville Cardinals, and then also the softball team wrapping up their regular season with a three-game sweep of Georgia Tech. So we got that in a bag of chips coming up for you. One quick note here, and I'll get into this as well a little bit later, but we have a subscription special over on our website, ClemsonSportsTalk.com. Right now, 3 months of coverage for just $1. We're going to be putting out more premium content. We're calling it the Trey Special. You can find out why here in just a little bit, but safe to say 3 months for just a dollar is a unbelievable deal. Go check that out right now on ClemsonSportsTalk.com. All right, without further ado, though, William Quackenbush joins our program here on a Monday afternoon. He is as handsome as he is engaging and charming. He is a scholar and a gentleman. Quack, welcome in. What's up, man?
I can honestly say, Swanee, it's the first time and probably the last time that I've been introduced that way. So thanks for the flattery, undeserved as it is. But I'm doing well. I'm doing well. It's like 85 degrees up here, so I'm starting to get some summer, a little whiff of summer. And that makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside because students are going to be gone soon. I'll be able to drive somewhere in a normal manner.
You'll be able to eat at Wendy's?
It's going to be you. Yeah. Imagine that.
Goodness. That's the one thing that is, and for people that have never lived in Clemson, that is the big change, man. When the students are gone, the roads are clear. If I can segue clear into anything, what became clear on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is that Clemson's 10-3 record in football was maybe not as much about DJ Uiagalelei, but perhaps there just wasn't quite the talent on this team. You look at the draft, Andrew Booth goes in the second round. That's the first pick off the board. Then you got to get Baylen Specter in the seventh round. And outside of that, Mario Goodrich trying to find a home and does with Philadelphia. Justin Ross's situation. I mean, the fact is, quote, this was just wasn't a stellar draft class for the Tigers.
Yeah, it was the weakest draft class in, 14, 15 years? I think two draftees is the fewest in the Dabo Swinney era. That includes the 2009 draft. I think I'm including the 2009 draft in that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so, you know, it was a one-off in more ways than one. I mean, here's what's interesting. When you look at these recruiting classes, okay, there's a couple of things that stand out. One is that immediately after the national championship, which most people would say it takes you really 2 years to get the full, the full-fledged national championship bump. You're not really going to get it immediately in the aftermath of a national championship. But that 2019 class that was really put together largely coming off the 2017 season, it has not really done what it needed to do in terms of providing lots of value to this team. Now, those are your fourth-year guys. You can look at somebody like Justin Ross. Obviously, we think Ross was on the T. Higgins track, right? It was easy to see him fill in Higgins' shoes. And then you have injuries, and then you have a congenital spinal neck condition that required surgery that not every doctor thought he would ever play again. That played into it a little bit as well. You have some guys who maybe would have been next up on that defensive front that maybe got hurt or passed over on the depth chart that transferred. You wonder about a guy, particularly with the number of injuries Clemson had, you wonder about a guy like Niles Pinckney or a guy like Jordan Williams. If they're able to stay and take some of those reps, do they sneak into the draft? And then you have the curious case of Mario Goodrich where, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles only had 5 draft picks. They had 2 in the 6th round. They ended up paying him like a 6th-round pick. In fact, they paid him more money than any 6th or 7th-round pick is guaranteed to get. And so it was an interesting draft from that standpoint. I don't think it was necessarily a lack of talent. I think it was some extenuating circumstances in a couple of situations and maybe some misses, some injuries, some of the combination there. I do expect this to be a one-off, though, because I've already seen mock drafts have multiple Tigers going in the first round next year, and I would expect that to be the case, particularly up front on the defensive line.
Well, and you look at Ross's situation, and apparently he's going to end up, I guess, with a undrafted free agent deal with the Kansas City Chiefs, which might work out for him. I said when he announced he was going pro quark, and I'm not like a big anti-GoPro early guy, but I just thought his numbers this year didn't do enough to prove that he could be what he once was. And I think that really hurt him. I really believe he should have, looking back on it with NIL and things like that, maybe that's an encouragement for players at some point, to return. Because now you can make a little coin while you're at college and you can prove that you're worth being selected in the 3rd, 4th round or whatever.
You know, it's a good point. We're seeing that a little bit with college basketball, too, where guys with sketchy NBA futures are coming back. I'm thinking particularly about Oscar Tshiebwe at Kentucky, Armando Bacot in North Carolina. Those are really the two main examples. You think about a guy like Justin Ross. I mean, look, I like guys betting on themselves. I think you ought to bet on yourself. There's sometimes, though, where, maybe you want to just take the bird in the hand, so to speak, and maybe that's how they felt in the Justin Ross camp here, that you take what you can get draft-wise, because while you can go back to school and improve your stature a little bit, improve that draft stock, there's also the chance you play more ball and it ends up going worse for you. And I really think, I've talked to some people about this, and you hear some of the things that were going on around the Clemson program. I think more so than the physical hurdle. I think the physical hurdle was a big deal to a lot of teams. But I think for Justin Ross in particular, the issues this year were less physical than mental. This is a guy who had an x-ray during a game because he didn't feel right. Okay, nobody told him there was anything wrong with him. Nobody said there was anything that required an x-ray. In fact, the x-rays came up fine, which is what the doctors were saying. But at the same time, you got a guy who clearly is not competing with the same level of fire, the same level of confidence that he did before they found this this congenital neck issue that potentially could have cost him his career. I think it impacted his ability to compete. Now, you might say, well, why wouldn't you go back to college and kind of try to rebuild that? Maybe you'd rather see if while you're, making a legitimate big boy paycheck in the NFL, even on a practice squad, that you can work that stuff out rather than hoping that an NIL deal finds you. I think that's maybe the calculation here. I would agree that there is an easy calculation to make that says, come back to school 1 year, try to rebuild that stock. I just wonder if all of the factors that potentially could have cost Justin Ross his career and maybe cost him some production in the 2021 season, if that stuff would be easier alleviated or maybe it's a more manageable situation if they're not alleviated, if he's already getting a paycheck, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Follow him on Twitter at QualTalk. He's William Quackenbush. He joins us every Monday afternoon to talk a little bit about your Clemson Tigers. And with that, Quack, Andrew Booth, I compared him favorably here on the show leading up to the draft to a little larger version of a Mackenzie Alexander, really liked his kind of focus, his mindset on an island, the way he wanted to play the game. And then what do you know, he ends up with the Minnesota Vikings, the same team that drafted Mackenzie Alexander. Just some of your thoughts on what Andrew Booth might give the Vikings and ultimately any team that he gets a chance to play with in the NFL.
Yeah, well, he's going to give that feistiness, that competitiveness. Now, if you've heard from some folks who follow the draft, they'll say, well, you know, you turn on the film, you see inconsistent tackling. To me, it's not inconsistent tackling from passivity. It's more inconsistent tackling for maybe being a bit too aggressive, maybe getting a little bit out over his feet, leaning over and losing his center of gravity. And that kind of stuff, I think, you could see with Andrew Booth this year. But he is a guy who does like to come downhill and hit. He will jam you at the line of scrimmage. He does have the ability to erase his own mistakes with athleticism. We've seen, I call it the one highlight a game ratio, where the guy just finds a way to make a highlight play, it seems like, every single time out, and he's a walking highlight on a down-for-down basis, where every time you put him out there, you know that potential exists. I think he's going to do well in Minnesota because I think he's a guy that can do well anywhere in the modern NFL. Is he without false steps in coverage? No. Is he a totally finished product when it comes to flipping his hips and running with guys? No. Does he have some tendencies to, as I said, kind of bail out on run plays because he gets a little too aggressive? Of course. But I feel like he's a guy with first-round athleticism, with a lot of first-round tape, and with some issues that cause him to fall to the second round, maybe some health issues as well, with, you know, not being able to test at the combine, not being able to test at the pro day, which I really thought wouldn't hurt him that much because it seems like his athleticism plays. I didn't think anybody needed to see Andrew Booth run the 40 or needed to see him bench press X number of times or whatever. I didn't think teams needed to see that to be convinced of it. I kind of thought it was self-evident, but maybe that's the reason some teams passed on him. I just think he's going to have a heck of a career, maybe even more so than Mackenzie Alexander, to be honest with you, because I feel like Booth is maybe a little bit more naturally athletic and maybe not quite the sort of chip-on-the-shoulder cockiness that McKenzie plays with, but I think he's able to, game after game, give you a similar effort and a similar level of production, and I think the Vikings are going to like that about him.
Yeah, I agree. I think the extra length, too, is going to definitely help him, and he'll have a chance to make a name for himself in the NFL. One of the other kind of weird ironies, I don't know if that's the right word here, Qualk, of Clemson's success in the NFL draft is honestly how few offensive linemen, you know, have had careers in the NFL or even been drafted during this stretch of years for Clemson. And I'm watching, and then you got a guy from NC State going like third or fourth overall, whatever it was. You got a guy from Boston College going like 16th, and I'm thinking to myself, man, in Clemson's run of success here, you've never really had anybody consider that level on the offensive line. And that just kind of speaks volumes, I think, about the skill position talent with Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence and Etienne and the wideouts that Clemson's had, because they've done it without, I guess you would say, elite offensive linemen. I mean, is that a fair statement in your opinion?
Yeah, it is fair, and I mean, you could look at Jackson Carman, you could look at, you know, maybe a couple of guys like that. John Simpson's had a nice career, but wasn't, you know, overdrafted necessarily.
Right.
To your point, I mean, I think there are two places recently, I think it goes without saying in one aspect, but in the other aspect, I think you have to think a little harder about it. Offensive line and linebacker are places where Clemson maybe has not gotten the NFL draft bang for your buck. You look at offensive line, you know, it's very clear. Bobby Caldwell liked guys who could play multiple positions. He liked to cross-train guys. Even Mitch Hyatt, you know, he came with a five-star billing but had some physical limitations, you know, the length of his arms and things like that we heard all about, you know, when it came time to be drafted. And Mitch Hyatt was a great college player,
yeah,
just not a great pro and not a great pro prospect. You look at linebacker, similar thing, Brent Venables. He really liked big thumpers that could go in the box and play at 250 pounds. Guess what's happening in the NFL right now? They're getting safeties and undersized linebackers, growing them into 250-pound players in an NFL weight training program and asking those guys to play in space. And so I feel like, yes, there was a bit of a shift when you bring in guys like Trent Simpson and Barrett Carter, but for a lot of the Brent Venables tenure, one of the strange ironies, as you termed it, was that Venables, the best coordinator in the country, his position group was lousy in terms of spitting guys out into the NFL draft. Doesn't mean that they weren't productive. Doesn't mean they didn't fit in the system. It just meant that at that particular position, what the NFL values is not necessarily what Brent Venables valued in that group. I would say the same thing is true with Robbie Caldwell, although at the linebacker spot, you did have an Isaiah Simmons. You've had some guys that fit the bill, the Dorian O'Daniels that were drafted in the middle of the draft, and then, of course, Simpson and Carter, who we think are our future potential round one picks in their own right. But at the offensive line, you really haven't had an exception like that. So you know that that's truly by design. This is who Robbie Caldwell wanted to run with, and it'll be interesting to see if that changes at all with Thomas Alston at the wheel.
I could not agree more. Follow him on Twitter, at William Quackenbush. Another couple of minutes here on a Monday afternoon. I think the take on the linebacker situation is a good one, Quack, because it never really registered with me, but you're right. I mean, if you talk about the thumper-type linebacker, that's not, you know, who's making it from Clemson into the NFL. So we'll see what ends up happening on that front. All right, let's switch gears real quick. Tiger baseball, we knew that this was going to be a tough series this weekend. Clemson won back-to-back series against top 25 opponents. Did not go well this weekend against Louisville. And, Quack, I think the biggest thing, you know, somebody posted on social media, they said, how do you score 15 runs and lose? Well, I'll tell you what, man, when you shoot yourself in the foot, I mean, errors will do it in a minute.
Yeah, it was rough to watch this weekend because, boy, the bats came alive. Max Wagner, we found out earlier today, ACC Player of the Week, National Player of the Week by Collegiate Baseball, one of the, I think, 12 guys that they honored with that. The guy got on base 11 out of 14 times. He was a man possessed, up and down the lineup. Blake Wright contributed a ton. He had Engel with some big numbers. And even at the bottom of the order, you had some moments. But when you're starting pitchers, Swanee, give you basically 7 2/3 innings. They gave you 23 out of 72 outs this weekend. When you give up 12 unearned runs, in terms of earned runs, Louisville gave up more earned runs than Clemson this weekend. Think about that. Louisville gave up 25 earned runs to Clemson's 23. The difference was a 12-0 advantage to Louisville in unearned runs allowed. Clemson's defense failed it at the most inopportune times. Yesterday, I know that the wind was a problem. I know it actually benefited Clemson in helping six home runs get out of the yard. At least a couple of those were wind-aided. But if Louisville catches the ball every time, and I know the conditions were tough, if Louisville catches the ball every time, you have to catch the ball every time. You cannot be behind the eight ball. Louisville had three error-free games this weekend. Clemson had six errors contributing to those 12 unearned runs. You just simply cannot do that. And I'll say there was one other factor here, and it was strikeouts. In the first two games of the series, Clemson struck out 28 times combined. That was a double-digit deficit with regards to Louisville. I've said forever, if you are striking guys out, your offense can strike guys out. But when you're in a big deficit, like the two games against Pitt, where I think Clemson was minus 21 in terms of strikeouts in a two-game span, you're not winning those games. That's way too many balls in play by your opponent, and that's way too few balls put in play by you. They have got to close that gap either by striking out more guys or by not striking out as much. And when the ball is put in play, they have got to catch and throw it better because that was just brutal to watch as Louisville piled up unearned run after unearned run this weekend.
Listen, Qualt, buddy, I think you're all over it as well. Spot on, still handsome as ever. And we will talk to you next Monday, my man.
Thanks, Swanee. Always good to be with you.
Again, follow him on Twitter at Qualk Talk. 803-450-0086. 803-450-0086 is the easiest way for you to be a part of the program. You can leave us a message. And as William Quackenbush mentioned, yes, Max Wagner was indeed honored by the ACC and honored nationally again. This week, we'll get into some of what he did over the weekend coming up in just a little bit on the program. And as usual here, we hope to be joined by our buddy Brad Owen. So we'll see if we can get Brad in hour number two of the show. 803-450-0086. 803-450-0086. So earlier I mentioned the subscription deal that we've got going on over on our website. I'll give you some more insight into why we've got that going on and taking place over on ClemsonSportsTalk.com when we get back here on a Monday afternoon. Stay with us. Rolling along here on a Monday afternoon, Lawton Swan, the show that shakes the Southland. And first, I want to say couple of notes. Like, if you are a radio listener in the Midlands, you know I talk a lot about Teddy Hefner. And, of course, you can listen to Teddy's show from 9 until noon right here on Fox Sports Radio 1400. And I have been in this radio market for 8 years or so, and they've been great. I've been doing the podcast, if you talk about just doing the radio-type deal, since about 2004, 2005. But on the air in Columbia for, you know, it's been an incredible run, 9 years or so, 8, 9 years. I can't even keep up with it now. I lost track at some point. I guess I could go back and tally it up and figure it all out. But I will say that the opportunities that I had in this business and have had in this business have been shaped by all kinds of people and a lot of individuals in radio and sometimes the competition in radio. And by now, many of you have probably heard that over the weekend, Benji Norton passed away. Benji was, at one time, one of the tri-hosts for a local morning show and just a super nice guy. You know, your competition is always going to be there. But Benji, anytime I spoke with him, he was a tiger through and through. I actually had the privilege of working with his daughter for a year in my day job a couple of years ago, and it was kind of neat to make that connection, and he and I got reconnected through that, and we would text occasionally to talk about Clemson, or he would ask me what I was hearing was going on up in Tigertown, and we just, you know, had a generally good relationship. And, you know, hearing the news over the weekend that he had passed away, and then the release from his station that it had happened, and, you know, I don't know any of the circumstances behind what took place, but I just felt like, you know, it's the right thing to do. And what bothers me, maybe more than anything, if I were to go back into our text threads with one another, we were always saying, hey, we got to get together. We'd never officially met. We hadn't been on any events face-to-face. Like, I know some of the other local guys maybe have run into him, and of course he was working at another station since. But I just, you know, I think about, like, his role at one time would have been to be sort of the Clemson guy in the Midlands prior to this show's arrival. And, you know, the opportunities that we did have to exchange text and calls and talk. I will miss that, and I'll miss the fact that I didn't do more to find the time to, you know, connect and dig in and learn a little bit. He, you know, in this business of competition, was more than willing to say to me, hey, this is somebody I think you should call about advertising. This is somebody that I think would be interested in your show. And several times that worked out for me. So again, my thoughts and prayers go out to his family. Just some shocking news. Again, Benji Norton passing away over the weekend. And I just, you know, I wanted to take a moment here and recognize his contributions to local radio. Columbia is not a huge city. A lot of us know each other. And that was certainly a shock to my system, and I think a shock to the systems of a lot of people in and around the Columbia area. Hearing that news. 803-450-0086. Text line, phone line. Again, you can be a part of the program anytime, any place, anywhere by calling us. And it is an easy phone call. You can leave us a message. And additionally, you can also be a part of what we do here on the program over on our website, where right now, get this, we talk about our price quite a bit, right? $63.17 for 1 year of coverage. Well, we have a brand new special running right now. $1 for 3 months. We're calling it the Trey Special. Trey, I guess, technically as in three. because our buddy Trey Stewart, who left us to go out to Wyoming and work for a while, has returned. And amongst his return, we are going to be celebrating giving away 3 months of coverage for just $1. So you can sign up today. That's right. 3 months of coverage, premium insight. That'll get you. And there'll be a lot more stuff behind the paywall for these 3 months. I can guarantee you that. But we would love to have you step in and support us by becoming a premium subscriber for just $1 for 3 months over on ClemsonSportsTalk.com. Well, as we mentioned with William Quackenbush earlier, it was a tough weekend for your Clemson Tigers. We will get back into some of that. We'll talk with Brad Owens, Director of Baseball Operations up at Clemson, hopefully in hour number two of the show, and just get his vibe on how the team's feeling as they come off of the heels of that sweep. We'll talk a little more NFL draft here on the show as well. Just a lot of shaking going on in the world of Clemson right now. And I think, you know, as William Quackenbush and I mentioned, a bit of a disappointing weekend for several Clemson Tigers there in the NFL draft. And we are going to reach out to Andrew Booth's people. We're going to try to connect with Justin Ross. We'll certainly reach out to Baylen Spector. We'll try to dig in on Mario Goodrich as well and get you connected with all those guys as they begin to make their way to the NFL. I think one takeaway, and again, I think it's worth mentioning, when you look at Clemson's 10-3 season a year ago, and you look at the limited numbers of players drafted, I'm not saying that you should be surprised, but it definitely reflects maybe some of the results that you saw this past year. But there is a looming positive, a huge positive in my estimation on that front. And I'll tell you what, when we get back, I'll tell you exactly what I think the huge positive in a lot of respects is about the fact that you did not have a ton of players drafted from Clemson over the weekend. 803-450-0086. Text line, phone line, hit us up. We'll be right back with more of the show that shakes the Southland on a Monday afternoon. Back at it, a Monday afternoon Clemson Sports Talk. We're on Twitter at Clemson Sports, where 24,000+ people already follow us. As ridiculous as that sounds, we'd love to have you come join us as well. Let's take it to 50 and then 100 and then 150. Then what the heck? Let's go for the mil. All right. So I mentioned before the break, and again, let me give you that Twitter handle at Clemson Sports. It's easy. I mentioned before the break that, yeah, it was not a great draft for Clemson. And it was good to see some guys get some opportunities. Again, over on our website, we got a great article up right now, The Roar. We're bringing it back. We've been away for a while, returning. And just sort of talking about the fact that, look, even a guy like Mario Goodrich got a deal with the Eagles that will grant him a very nice paycheck, even more so than guys who are drafted late in the draft, and you get to pick a spot as an unrestricted free agent or an undrafted free agent where you feel like you fit in. And it's great to see Justin Ross again getting an opportunity with the Kansas City Chiefs. But, you know, that draft didn't go the way that I think most people expected. Certainly not the way I expected it to. I thought Andrew Booth was good enough to be a first-round pick. Quark tended to agree, but again, him not working out and doing all that, I think hurt him. But I think the positive of this not being a good draft for Clemson is the fact that next year's draft class is most likely going to be absolutely ridiculous. Probably going to be loaded. You've got so much talent. Even a guy like Trenton Simpson, unfortunately, with a great year, maybe trending towards being in the draft. You've got a ton of defensive linemen there that could climb up into being first-round picks, at least top three, third-round picks. I almost said top three, but not you know, first three rounds. You know, just kind of on and on and on, the numbers of players that will have a chance next season. And we'll look at some of those 2023 names, not specifically from Clemson, but a kind of preview of what that 2023 class will look like. And honestly, this time a year ago, prior to the kickoff of the college football season, the belief was that, you know, DJ Uiagalelei would most likely be one of the top draft picks in a futures selection on the 2023 NFL draft. But now, with the way things have shaped up or shaked out or whatever the whatever the right terminology is for it, it has not been an advantageous career thus far for DJ Uiagalelei as the guy. So, you know, all that being said, the odds are next season's draft will be littered with Clemson Tigers. That's what you would expect to see. As for the futures, they've got the Houston Texans landing at number one next year, drafting Bryce Young, the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback from Alabama. The Falcons, perhaps with the second pick, will draft Will Anderson, a defensive lineman, or I guess technically an edge rusher from Alabama. The New York Jets drafting Jalen Carter from Georgia. You've got the Detroit Lions drafting quarterback C.J. Stroud from Ohio State with the fourth pick. The Jacksonville Jaguars giving Big Trev the Giant Killer a tight end with Eric Gilbert out of Georgia. They've got the Carolina Panthers drafting a quarterback, Tanner McKee, out of Stanford. And then you scroll on down. So that's a quick look at the top six, including your Carolina Panthers, for all you Panther fans out there. You dig down a little bit deeper into the first round. They've got Brian Brzee going 14th overall to the Minnesota Vikings as the former number one recruit in the 2020 class. They've got Trenton Simpson going 16th to the Las Vegas Raiders. So a couple of first-round defensive prospects there for Clemson. They've got the 22nd pick going to the Cincinnati Bengals, being Miles Murphy off the edge for your Clemson Tigers. And that wraps it up. But three potential first-round selections alone projected for your Clemson Tigers next year. The Gamecocks, by the way, with two projected first-round draft picks, including Jaheim Bell, the tight end, projected to go 29th. And again, this is a way too early list, 29th to the Green Bay Packers. And then cornerback Cam Smith projected to go to the Philadelphia Eagles with the 12th overall selection. So South Carolina with two potential picks, Clemson with three potential first-round selections next year in the NFL draft. And who knows, you start talking about some other names that could work their way in there. Could a big season for a KJ Henry or Tyler Davis, could a big season for Xavier Thomas, you know, manage to wiggle their names into first round considerations? Maybe so. One thing is for sure, though, and this may be symbolic in a lot of respects, given the fact that Clemson's year went the way it did, and then you had the Georgia Bulldogs break the record for the most players drafted in the NFL draft, in the history of an NFL draft, a new record for the seven-round NFL draft. We'll give you the ins and outs of Georgia's run of success this past weekend at the NFL draft when we get back here on the program. 803-450-0086. Don't miss the subscription special right now on ClemsonSportsTalk.com. 3 months for just $1. That's on ClemsonSportsTalk.com right now. Head over. We're going to have that that special up for about 2 months. So take advantage as soon as possible. We'll hit a quick break. We'll come back with more Clemson Sports Talk on Fox Sports Radio 1400 and, of course, on the iHeartRadio app. Final segment of hour number one. It looks like we're not going to be able to connect with Brad Owens for hour number two. So I apologize for that. Hopefully we can get up with him next week. He was dealing with a couple of things this afternoon and won't be able to come on the show. That's all right, though. 803-450-0086. What we might do, you know what I can do? Since I got it in the coffers, I can potentially reset our interview with William Quackenbush, because most of you show up in hour number two anyway to hear from William Quackenbush, but we had him on in hour number one. So maybe we'll dive into some of that conversation with Quack, because he did talk about the baseball team a good bit, and that's exactly what we were going to talk with. That's what we were going to talk with Brad Owens about. Plus, I can roll my stuff about Max Wagner over into hour number two as well. But I was mentioning before the break the fact that the Georgia Bulldogs had an unbelievable draft class, surpassing the 2019 draft class of the LSU Tigers after they defeated Clemson. The LSU Tigers went on to have 14 players selected in the NFL draft. Well, that's been topped. I guess technically that was the 2020 NFL draft. Kirby Smart's Georgia Bulldogs over the weekend had 15 players drafted, setting a new record during the seven-round era, which began back in 1994. Things got started with the first pick overall by the Jacksonville Jaguars, taking Trayvon Walker on Thursday night. Then with the 13th pick, Jordan Davis was taken by the Philadelphia Eagles. The 22nd pick of the first round was Quay Walker to the Green Bay Packers. The 29th pick was Devontae Wyatt by the Green Bay Packers. And the 32nd overall selection and the 5th of the night during the first round was Lewis Kine to the Minnesota Vikings. The second round selections featured George Pickens, wide receiver to the Pittsburgh Steelers, James Cook, running back to the Buffalo Bills. In the third round, N'Kobe Dean surprisingly dropped a little bit to me, drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles, and Channing Tindall was drafted by the Miami Dolphins. In the fourth round, Zamir White went to the Las Vegas Raiders. Jake Kamada went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then in the sixth round, the Georgia Bulldogs had Justin Schaefer taken by the Atlanta Falcons, Jamari Sawyer taken by the Los Angeles Chargers, Darion Kendrick, your former Clemson Tiger, drafted by the Los Angeles Rams, and then John Fitzpatrick, drafted by the Atlanta Falcons. By round, Georgia had 5 players taken in the first round, 2 players taken in the second, 2 taken in the third, 2 taken in the fourth, and 4 players taken in the sixth round. Furthermore, they did not even have a player drafted in the seventh round. They did it, the Bulldogs did it, in 6th rounds, technically speaking. Again, Darion Kendrick started all 15 games this past year for the Bulldogs, finished with 41 tackles and a team-high 4 interceptions. He was the defensive MVP of the Capital One Orange Bowl for the Bulldogs and was the first Georgia player drafted by the Los Angeles Rams since Todd Gurley back in 2015. So monumental season for the Georgia Bulldogs when it comes down to winning the national championship and then having the most players drafted in a single draft class in the history of college football, dating back to, I guess, the 7-round draft selections since 1994. I mean, I know that's not the history, but for crying out loud, that's a long, long time to have a team sitting that high and doing things as well as the Georgia Bulldogs did it in the NFL draft. And that goes to, or that speaks to, I think it's safe to say, the fact that talent is going to win championships. And Clemson this past year did not have the talent to win a national championship. And a lot of that started with quarterback. Furthermore, and I'll take it a good bit further with this, I mentioned the projected draft. One of the things that you may have noticed is that all three players for Clemson next year were defenders at the top of that mock draft, and no DJ Uiagalelei. And again, as I mentioned, at one point along the way, I mean, he was projected to be one of those kind of top five draft picks next season. Instead, he's nowhere to be found in the first 32 picks in the 2023 projections. The good news, I would say, on that front is this. There is no doubt in my mind that DJ could work his way in to being one of the top guys in the NFL draft, but it's going to take a season of epic proportion at this point for people to buy into and believe in DJ Uiagalelei as the same type prospect that they saw him as previously. It is similar to, I think, the Justin Ross case, only with performance and not injuries. Justin Ross was once considered a first-round draft pick, and maybe had he been able to turn pro after his freshman year, maybe some people would have taken, some people might have risked it for the biscuit, given how good he was in the college football playoff and having 1,000 yards his first year. But after that issue with his spine and his neck, you got to prove it. And I think Ross didn't really have the chance to prove it. And without a great year, I don't know that DJ Uiagalelei will have enough in the tank after this season to prove it either. Hour two coming up.
It's time for Clemson Sports Talk with Lawton Swan.
Just call me Swanee.
Tiger style.
Is hour number two. That's Drive Time right here on the show that shakes the Southland Clemson Sports Talk. Lawton Swan with you on a Monday afternoon. We had hoped to get up with Brad Owens. Unfortunately, we can't get him on the show today. We did sit down with William Qualkenbush in hour number one, which some of you are saying, that's weird, Swanee. I tend to listen to William Qualkenbush on my way home when I hop in the car with you. Hey, don't fret. Since we couldn't get... Since we couldn't get Brad Owens on with us here in hour number two, we'll reset our interview that we did with William Qualkenbush. We talked about a lot of different topics with him. So without further ado, here is that interview in its entirety. He is as handsome as he is engaging and charming. He is a scholar and a gentleman. Qualk, welcome in. What's up, man?
I can honestly say, Swanee, it's the first time and probably the last time that I've been introduced that way. So thanks for the flattery, undeserved as it is. But I'm doing well. I'm doing well. It's like 85 degrees up here, so I'm starting to get some summer, a little whiff of summer. And that makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside because students are going to be gone soon. I'll be able to drive somewhere in a normal manner.
You'll be able to eat at Wendy's?
It's going to be for you. Yeah. Imagine that.
Goodness. That's the one thing that is, and for people that have never lived in Clemson, that is the big change, man. When the students are gone, the roads are clear. Quote, what I guess if I can segue clear into anything, what became clear on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is that Clemson's 10-3 record in football was maybe not as much about DJ Uiagalelei, but perhaps there just wasn't quite the talent on this team. You look at the draft, Andrew Booth goes in the second round. That's the first pick off the board. Then you got to get Baylen Specter in the seventh round. And outside of that, Mario Goodrich trying to find a home and does with Philadelphia. Justin Ross's situation. I mean, the fact is, quote, this just wasn't a stellar draft class for the Tigers.
Yeah, it was the weakest draft class in, what, 14, 15 years? I think two draftees is the fewest in the Dabo Swinney era. That includes the 2009 draft. I think I'm including the 2009 draft in that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so, you know, it was a one-off in more ways than one. I mean, here's what's interesting. When you look at these recruiting classes, okay, there's a couple of things that stand out. One is that immediately after the national championship, which most people would say it takes you really 2 years to get the full, the full-fledged national championship bump. You're not really going to get it immediately in the aftermath of a national championship. But that 2019 class that was really put together largely coming off the 2017 season, it has not really done what it needed to do in terms of providing lots of value to this team. Now, those are your fourth-year guys. You can look at somebody like Justin Ross. Obviously, we think Ross was on the T. Higgins track, right? It was easy to see him fill in Higgins' shoes. And then you have injuries, and then you have a congenital spinal neck condition that required surgery that not every doctor thought he would ever play again. That played into it a little bit as well. You have some guys who maybe would have been next up on that defensive front that maybe got hurt or were passed over on the depth chart that transferred. You wonder about a guy, particularly with the number of injuries Clemson had, you wonder about a guy like Niles Pinckney or a guy like Jordan Williams. If they're able to stay and take some of those reps, do they sneak into the draft? And then you have the curious case of Mario Goodrich where, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles only had five draft picks. They had two in the sixth round. They ended up paying him like a sixth-round pick. In fact, they paid him more money than any sixth- or seventh-round pick is guaranteed to get. And so it was an interesting draft from that standpoint. I don't think it was necessarily a lack of talent. I think it was some extenuating circumstances in a couple of situations and maybe some misses, some injuries, some of the combination there. I do expect this to be a one-off, though, because I've already seen mock drafts have multiple Tigers going in the first round next year, and I would expect that to be the case, particularly up front on the defensive line.
Well, and you look at Ross's situation, and apparently he's going to end up, I guess, with a undrafted free agent deal with the Kansas City Chiefs, which might work out for him. I said when he announced he was going pro, Qualk, and I'm not like a big anti-GoPro early guy, but I just thought his numbers this year didn't do enough to prove that he could be what he once was. And I think that really hurt him. I really believe he should have, looking back on it with NIL and things like that, maybe that's an encouragement for players at some point, to return. Because now you can make a little coin while you're at college and you can prove that you're worth being selected in the third, fourth round or whatever.
You know, it's a good point. We're seeing that a little bit with college basketball, too, where guys with sketchy NBA futures are coming back. I'm thinking particularly about Oscar Tshiebwe at Kentucky, Armando Bacot in North Carolina. Those are really the two main examples. You think of a guy like Justin Ross. I mean, look, I like guys betting on themselves. I think you ought to bet on yourself. There's sometimes, though, where, maybe you want to just take the bird in the hand, so to speak, and maybe that's how they felt in the Justin Ross camp here, that you take what you can get draft-wise, because while you can go back to school and improve your stature a little bit, improve that draft stock, there's also the chance you play more ball and it ends up going worse for you. And I really think, I've talked to some people about this, and you hear some of the things that were going on around the Clemson program, I think more so than the physical hurdle. I think the physical hurdle was a big deal to a lot of teams, but I think for Justin Ross in particular, the issues this year were less physical than mental. This is a guy who had an x-ray during a game because he didn't feel right, okay? Nobody told him there was anything wrong with him. Nobody said there was anything that required an x-ray. In fact, the x-rays came up fine, which is what the doctors were saying. But at the same time, you got a guy who clearly is not competing with the same level of fire, the same level of confidence that he did before they found this this congenital neck issue that potentially could have cost him his career. I think it impacted his ability to compete. Now, you might say, well, why wouldn't you go back to college and kind of try to rebuild that? Maybe you'd rather see if while you're, you know, making a legitimate big boy paycheck in the NFL, even on a practice squad, that you can work that stuff out rather than hoping that an NIL deal finds you. I think that's maybe the calculation here. I would agree that there is an easy calculation to make that says, come back to school 1 year, try to rebuild that stock. I just wonder if all of the factors that potentially could have cost Justin Ross his career and maybe cost him some production in the 2021 season, if that stuff would be easier alleviated, or maybe it's a more manageable situation if they're not alleviated, if he's already getting a paycheck, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Follow him on Twitter at QualTalk. He's William Quackenbush. He joins us every Monday afternoon to talk a little bit about your Clemson Tigers. And with that, Qualk, you know, Andrew Booth, I compared him favorably here on the show leading up to the draft to a, you know, a little larger version of a Mackenzie Alexander. Really liked his kind of focus, his mindset on an island, the way he wanted to play the game. And then what do you know? He ends up with the Minnesota Vikings, the same team that drafted Mackenzie Alexander. Just some of your thoughts on what Andrew Booth might give the Vikings and ultimately any team that he gets a chance to play with in the NFL.
Yeah, well, he's going to give that feistiness, that competitiveness. Now, we, you know, if you've heard from some folks who follow the draft, they'll say, well, you know, you turn on the film, you see inconsistent tackling. To me, it's not inconsistent tackling from passivity. It's more inconsistent tackling for maybe being a bit too aggressive, maybe getting a little bit out over his feet, you know, leaning over and losing his center of gravity. And that kind of stuff, I think, you could see with Andrew Booth this year. But he is a guy who does like to come downhill and hit. He will jam you at the line of scrimmage. He does have the ability to erase his own mistakes with athleticism. We've seen, I call it the one highlight a game ratio, where the guy just finds a way to make a highlight play, it seems like, every single time out, and he's a walking highlight on a down-for-down basis where every time you put him out there, you know that potential exists. I think he's going to do well in Minnesota because I think he's a guy that can do well anywhere in the modern NFL. Is he without false steps in coverage? No. Is he a totally finished product when it comes to flipping his hips and running with guys? No. Does he have some tendencies to, as I said, kind of bail out on run plays because he gets a little too aggressive? Of course, but I feel like he's a guy with first-round athleticism, with a lot of first-round tape, and with some issues that cause him to fall to the second round, maybe some health issues as well with, you know, not being able to test at the combine, not being able to test at the pro day, which I really thought wouldn't hurt him that much because it seems like his athleticism plays. I didn't think anybody needed to see Andrew Booth run the 40 or needed to see him bench press X number of times or whatever. I didn't think teams needed to see that to be convinced of it. I kind of thought it was self-evident, but maybe that's the reason some teams passed on him. I just think he's going to have a heck of a career, maybe even more so than Mackenzie Alexander, to be honest with you, because I feel like Booth is maybe a little bit more naturally athletic and maybe not quite the sort of chip-on-the-shoulder cockiness that Mackenzie plays with, but I think he's able to, game after game, give you a similar effort and a similar level of production, and I think the Vikings are going to like that about him.
Yeah, I agree. I think the extra length, too, is going to definitely help him, and he'll have a chance to make a name for himself in the NFL. One of the other kind of weird ironies, I don't know if that's the right word here, Qualk, of Clemson's success in the NFL draft is honestly how few offensive linemen, you know, have had careers in the NFL or even been drafted during this stretch of years for Clemson. And I'm watching, and then you got a guy from NC State going like third or fourth overall, whatever it was. You got a guy from Boston College going like 16th, and I'm thinking to myself, man, in Clemson's run of success here, you've never really had anybody considered that level on the offensive line, and that just kind of speaks volumes, I think, about the skill position talent with Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence and Etienne and the wideouts that Clemson's had, because they've done it without, I guess you would say, elite offensive linemen. I mean, is that a fair statement in your opinion?
Yeah, it is fair. And, I mean, you could look at Jackson Carman. You could look at, you know, maybe a couple of guys like that. John Simpson's had a nice career but wasn't, you know, overdrafted necessarily.
Right.
To your point, I mean, I think there are two places recently, I think it goes without saying in one aspect, but in the other aspect, I think you have to think a little harder about it. Offensive line and linebacker are places where Clemson maybe has not gotten the NFL draft bang for your buck. You look at offensive line, you know, it's very clear. Bobby Caldwell liked guys who could play multiple positions. He liked to cross-train guys. Even Mitch Hyatt, you know, he came with a five-star billing but had some physical limitations, you know, with the length of his arms and things like that we heard all about, you know, when it came time to be drafted. And Mitch Hyatt was a great college player,
yeah,
just not a great pro and not a great pro prospect. You look at linebacker, similar thing, Brent Venables. He really liked big thumpers that could go in the box and play at 250 pounds. Guess what's happening in the NFL right now? They're getting safeties and undersized linebackers, growing them into 250-pound players in an NFL weight training program and asking those guys to play in space. And so I feel like, yes, there was a bit of a shift when you're bringing in guys like Trent Simpson and Barrett Carter, but for a lot of the Brent Venables tenure, one of the strange ironies, as you termed it, was that Venables, the best coordinator in the country, his position group was lousy in terms of spitting guys out into the NFL draft. Doesn't mean that they weren't productive, doesn't mean they didn't fit in the system. It just meant that at that particular position, what the NFL values is not necessarily what Brent Venables valued in that group. I would say the same thing is true with Robbie Caldwell, although at the linebacker spot, you did have an Isaiah Simmons. You've had some guys that fit the bill, the Dorian O'Daniels that were drafted in the middle of the draft, and then, of course, Simpson and Carter, who we think are our future potential round one picks in their own right. But at the offensive line, you really haven't had an exception like that. So you know that that's truly by design. This is who Robbie Caldwell wanted to run with. And it'll be interesting to see if that changes at all with Thomas Austin at the wheel.
I could not agree more. Follow him on Twitter, at William Quackenbush. Another couple of minutes here on a Monday afternoon. I think the take on the linebacker situation is a good one, Quack, because it never really registered with me, but you're right. I mean, if you talk about the thumper-type linebacker, that's not, you know, who's making it from Clemson into the NFL. So we'll see what ends up happening on that front. All right, let's switch gears real quick. Tiger baseball, we knew that this was going to be a tough series this weekend. Clemson won back-to-back series against top 25 opponents. Did not go well this weekend against Louisville. And, Quack, I think the biggest thing, you know, somebody posted on social media, they said, how do you score 15 runs and lose? Well, I'll tell you what, man, when you shoot yourself in the foot, I mean, errors will do it in a minute.
Yeah, it was rough to watch this weekend because, boy, the bats came alive. Max Wagner, we found out earlier today, ACC Player of the Week, National Player of the Week by Collegiate Baseball, one of the, I think, 12 guys that they honored with that. The guy got on base 11 out of 14 times. He was a man possessed up and down the lineup. Blake Wright contributed a ton. He had Engel with some big numbers. And even at the bottom of the order, you had some moments. But when you're starting pitchers, Swanee, give you basically 7 2/3 innings. They gave you 23 out of 72 outs this weekend. When you give up 12 unearned runs, in terms of earned runs, Louisville gave up more earned runs than Clemson this weekend. Think about that. Louisville gave up 25 earned runs to Clemson's 23. The difference was a 12-0 advantage to Louisville in unearned runs allowed. Clemson's defense failed it at the most inopportune times. Yesterday, I know that the wind was a problem. I know it actually benefited Clemson in helping 6 home runs get out of the yard. At least a couple of those were wind-aided. But if Louisville catches the ball every time, and I know the conditions were tough, if Louisville catches the ball every time, you have to catch the ball every time. You cannot be behind the eight ball. Louisville had 3 error-free games this weekend. Clemson had 6 errors contributing to those 12 unearned runs. You just simply cannot do that. And I'll say there was one other factor here, and it was strikeouts. In the first 2 games of the series, Clemson struck out 28 times combined. That was a double-digit deficit with regards to Louisville. I've said forever, if you are striking guys out, your offense can strike guys out. But when you're in a big deficit, like the 2 games against Pitt, where I think Clemson was minus 21 in terms of strikeouts in a 2-game span, you're not winning those games. That's way too many balls in play by your opponent, and that's way too few balls put in play by you. They have got to close that gap either by striking out more guys or by not striking out as much. And when the ball is put in play, they have got to catch and throw it better, because that was just brutal to watch as Louisville piled up unearned run after unearned run this weekend.
Listen, Qualt buddy, I think you're all over it as well. Spot on, still handsome as ever. And we will talk to you next Monday, my man.
Thanks, Swanee. Always good to be with you.
All right, so there it was, our sit-down with William Quackenbush from just a little while ago here on the program. 803-450-0086, 803-450-0086. I thought he had a lot of interesting takes on several key situations with Clemson, most notably the baseball team, and shooting themselves in the foot is the absolute correct way to put it. This weekend, the unearned runs that they gave up against a top 10 college baseball team, that's just not going to get it done. When you are in a situation like that against a team as good as Louisville, you have to capitalize on any opportunities, and you cannot allow them to extend innings, to get unearned runs. And I mean, that's not necessarily the tail of the tape this weekend for Clemson, but I mean, that was the big loss in terms of what happened and why you don't salvage a game singular, maybe win two out of three. It comes down to some fundamentals. And I remember at one point late in Jack Leggett's tenure at Clemson, how what would typically be maybe a routine play did not become routine. And Qualt mentioned the weather conditions, and the weather conditions were an issue for Clemson at Pittsburgh, and they were an issue at Notre Dame. But you know, that's everybody's playing in the same conditions. It's not, you know, 70 degrees and sunny with no wind when they're in the field, and, you know, terrible weather with high winds when you are. You got to clean it up, and Clemson baseball needs to clean it up. Max Wagner, however, has been cleaning up at the plate. We'll give you some of his numbers as of late next. Well, surprise, 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 buddy. I'll tell you what, man. You ought to be getting used to it by now. Clemson Sports Talk, Fox Sports Radio 1400. Max Wagner still to the max. Clemson sophomore infielder from Wisconsin. Named the ACC Player of the Week and one of 13 National Players of the Week by Collegiate Baseball America. The second week in a row that Max Wagner earned ACC Player of the Week honors, becoming the first Tiger to do that in a decade since Richie Schaefer pulled off the feat back in 2012. Wagner, red hot last week, 13 of 20. That's a .650 batting average. Four home runs, two doubles, 14 RBIs, 11 runs scored, a 1.35 slugging percentage, four walks, a .708 on-base percentage in five games. Four of those games were against top 25 competition. He reached base via a hit or a walk on 17 of his 24 plate appearances. He was 3 of 5 with 2 home runs and 6 RBIs in Clemson's 17-4 win over Wofford on Wednesday. And then in the weekend series against Louisville, he goes, 9 for 12 with 2 homers, 2 doubles, 7 RBIs, 6 runs scored, and a partridge in a pear tree. In the series finale, he was 4 of 5 with 2 homers and 5 RBIs. 21 home runs on the year, batting .403. Max Wagner, what are you doing? What are you doing, Max? I mean, I said it a week ago, talking with Brad Owens, and, you know, I can't imagine what it's like for this guy right now. It is as locked in as I can remember a Clemson baseball player being. And again, the bad part of it is you get swept over the weekend in a large respect because of defensive issues. But man, when it comes down to the offensive side of things, Max Wagner is downright offensive. I mean, he is doing work. Ridiculous pace right now for the sophomore from Green Bay, Wisconsin. 803-450-0086. Text line and phone line. If you want to be a part of the show, you can hit us up. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to connect with you. We'd love to chat about everything that you've got going on in the world of sports. Everything you want to talk about, we haven't even gotten into the NBA playoffs. I got a little update on that front. By the way, this weekend, for the family, we spent it in Greenville at a soccer tournament. My son played really well. I mean, really well. And unfortunately, they got to the championship game. They had actually outscored their opponents going into the championship game 11-1. So a really good weekend for them. But and got up 1-0 in the championship, but ended up falling three goals to one. But you know, here's the thing, right? Like, as a parent, I used to be like the yell at your kid guy when I was having to coach him where to be. Like, I felt like it was my responsibility to make sure that my son was doing the right thing. I'll let the coach worry about the other yahoos out there. I'll worry about my son and make sure that he's, you know, maneuvering or seeing the field or knowing there's a man behind him. And maybe some coaches hate it, but I just wanted him to be aware, like raise his awareness. And his awareness really got good playing FIFA, honestly, playing the game, started to see the field differently. That's when I really started to see his first steps forward in soccer, incredibly, was through the video games. And I do film all the games. I don't just film my son, however. I film the whole game so that we can go back and watch any moment that we want and kind of walk through, you know, film study. And I think that's helped advance his game as well. But I got to say, because he now understands the game and doesn't get out of position, you know, he doesn't make many mistakes at all, I tend to not say a word, and I'm filming. So it was a funny moment in the game because the game was tied 1-1, and there was a quick exchange, and the official on the far side missed an offsides call that was pretty blatantly offsides. And I was trying to explain to my son, look, you know, it's a bang-bang play. These officials are making $17.50 an hour. And if they're not certain that something's offsides, they're not just going to throw up the flag because they assume it's offsides. They have to know. And even though I was able to play it back and see that the ref had missed the call, yeah, I think adversity is the thing that helps you grow as a competitor. And Clemson, you know, you think about Dabo Swinney, Clemson had to go lose that national championship before they could win it. And I try to explain that to my son, that look, it's disappointing that you didn't win the tournament this weekend, but there's so much that you can grow. There are so many ways you can grow as a competitor and in a human in that loss. And you know, it's, and then they end up getting a second goal after that anyway, so that offsides goal didn't matter nonetheless. But I thought about former South Carolina basketball coach Frank Martin, and that's what I try to think about. And I wish more parents would think about like this. Those officials are making, you know, $17.50. And Frank Martin said, I don't say boo. Okay, at my kid's game, I don't say boo. And I don't blame, like, yes. I try not to fuss. The call was wrong. And so I just kind of said, man, I think he missed that call. And the parents on the other team were like, yeah, you could probably rewind it and look. And I did. And I was like, yeah, it was. And we all just kind of laughed. And, you know, about, listen, it happens. Calls get missed. Things happen in Little League. They happen in pros. I hate it. that calls aren't, you know, things aren't adjudicated perfectly, but it's the way it was. But man, what a great weekend and what a great learning experience to get back to another championship game on the pitch, if you will. We'll recap the weekend in the NBA when we return. Stay with us. Well, the weekend that was in the NBA playoffs looked a little like this. On Friday night, I told you, tune in, watch the Grizzlies. You have to tune in to watch Ja Morant. And once again, it was Ja Morant and his squad finding a way late on the road at Minnesota, 114-106, which means the Grizzlies advanced to take on the Golden State Warriors. There were no matchups on Saturday, but then Sunday, you had Milwaukee cruising past the Boston Celtics, 101-89. The Milwaukee Bucks, who are the defending champions, the 3 seed in the East, winning over Boston, taking a 1-0 lead in that series. And then in the afternoon game, you had the Golden State Warriors knocking off the Memphis Grizzlies, 117-116, a little upset on the road. Jordan Poole, the third Splash Brother, 31 points in that one for the Golden State Warriors. Ja Morant scored 34 in a losing effort. Golden State, I told my son, you know, he's a Memphis fan. I said, look, Golden State is going to be a tough out. And I think that Ja Morant is maybe a year or two away from becoming a league MVP type player. I think he's working his way there. But when you got to go up against that Golden State lineup and the way they shoot the basketball, folks, sheesh. I mean, it's tough because they spread you out and it's really changed the game. Like they've literally made interior players useless. And now you got this guy, Jordan Poole, coming off the bench playing 38 minutes and scoring 31 points on 5 of 10 shooting from downtown. You got Steph Curry going 5 of 12 from downtown. You got Klay Thompson going 3 of 10. 13 three-pointers between the three of them. Yeah, that's tough to deal with. Tough to deal with. We shall see if Memphis can win game two at home later this week. And it might be a must-win game given the dynamics of that Golden State ball club. As for the rest of the NBA, tonight, 7:30, Philadelphia and Miami get started in their first series. The Heat are the number one seed, or first game of the series. The Heat are the number one seed in the East. That is a 7:30 tip-off again on TNT. Then at 10 o'clock, game one between Dallas and Phoenix. The Suns are the number one overall seed in the NBA playoffs, and they will begin that series with Dallas also on TNT, and again at 10 o'clock. So just a brief look at the NBA playoffs, and there was an interesting article on ESPN. I mentioned Jordan Poole by Kendra Andrews talking about Jordan Poole's development and taking advantage of the COVID-19 year in order to improve his game. Jordan Poole averaged just 8.8 points per game, shooting 33%, including 27.9% beyond the three-point line as a rookie. He was a first-round pick and was supposed to enhance the Warriors' offense, but he struggled to score. And because he knew what he was capable of doing, he just kept working, kept playing to get better, kept doing the little things. He ends up this season averaging 22.7 points per game, shooting 48.8% from behind the arc. And, you know, you watch a guy develop that way, and it's pretty incredible to see his storyline, because back in March of 2020, when the league shut things down, Jordan Poole began working with Warriors assistant coach Chris DeMarco almost immediately. Jordan Poole said, I just knew that if I was able to get in there every single day, however long the pandemic was, I knew I would improve in some fashion. And so DeMarco and Poole worked out at the facilities. No one else was allowed to be there. They could only use one ball. They had to wear masks the entire time. And then it pays off. And then you just, you know, and this goes to, I told my son, you know, kind of going back to the soccer reference here. You know, one of the goals that I've given him is, and some of you will say, God, that sounds ridiculous, is to do 1,000 touches a day on the soccer ball. 1,000. Simply dribbling, you know, doing, you know, and just keeping up with it, doing them in sets of 100. When you get to 100, reset it and do your second 100 and work your way up. And, you know, it sounds ridiculous and it doesn't feel like maybe to the outside that how's that going to make him better. But what I was explaining to him, I said, look, son, when you consider a year, if you make it a goal to do it every day, and it's a lot easier, in my opinion, doing 1,000 touches on a soccer ball every day is a lot easier than saying, hey, I'm going to get on some weight loss program or something. You do 1,000 touches a day with a soccer ball. In 1 year, you are going to do 365,000 additional touches than most people. You're going to have kids you play with that they just do the touches during the practice, maybe a little bit at home. But if you do those additional ones every day and you make it a goal, you can change the course of your future of what you want to do with this sport. And that's what Jordan Poole did in the NBA. And I think it's a great, valuable lesson for kids to learn about, is that if you put in the work, you can begin to see the results. And good for Jordan Poole making it happen. I think it's going to be a pain for Memphis because this Golden State Warrior team is loaded. It's still going to be a fun series to watch, don't get me wrong, but Poole's work paying off for the Golden State Warriors. Final segment coming up. Stay with us.
What have you done for me lately? It's a fair question. Just don't lose sight of the bigger picture. Don't forget history. Lucky for us at Clemson, the answer to the questions, what have you done for me lately, and what have you done always, are the same. We win.
Final segment on the Monday, Clemson Sports Talk, Lawton Swan with you again, a three-game series sweep of your Clemson Tiger baseball team ends up being the outcome, I guess is the best way to put it, up at Louisville. And again, you knew it was a good team. Got to be frustrating, though, to not at least win one, especially given the issues Clemson had defensively in this series. The Tigers lose 7-2 on Friday, 10-8 on Saturday, and 18-15 on Sunday. They don't play a midweek game this week. They'll get back on the diamond Friday at 7 o'clock against Georgia Tech, a three-game series there. And then just two Atlantic Coast Conference series remaining after this one, as they'll take on Virginia on the road and then finish up the ACC schedule against Boston College the weekend of May 19th through the 21st. As for the Atlantic Coast Conference, standings and where Clemson sits at this point in the schedule, the Tigers currently sit in sixth place in the Atlantic Division, just a couple of games ahead of Boston College. The Eagles are 4-20 in league play. Clemson 16-14. Wake Forest 10-11. Florida State 11-10. NC State 11-9. Notre Dame 13-8. And Louisville on top of the Atlantic at 14-7. Could not have gone any worse for Clemson just in terms of ACC play this weekend. In the Coastal, Duke's at the bottom, 8-13, along with North Carolina, who's 8-13. Pitt's 10-10. Georgia Tech 12-12. Virginia at 14-10. Virginia Tech at 14-8. And Miami sitting on top of the Coastal Division at 17-7. Of course, only 12 teams make the Atlantic Coast Conference tournament. And at this point, Clemson would be sitting on the outside looking in. So they're going to have to close the season well in order to qualify for the Atlantic Coast Conference tournament. We knew that a week ago, but after being swept in three games, it's going to be increasingly more difficult for the Tigers to scratch their way into one of those coveted top spots. As for the Clemson softball team, they still don't know who they will play or what their schedule is going to look like as it pertains to the Atlantic Coast Conference season, but they have wrapped things off in a walk-off fashion against Georgia Tech. They played their final game of the regular season. The Tiger softball team improved to 37-14, 14-10 in the ACC. The Yellow Jackets fell to 36-15 and 11-13 in the league. Here is Coach John Rittman following the Tigers' victory and a sweep of the Yellow Jackets over the weekend.
Hey, for our seniors, a great walk-off win. So proud of our team. Just a hard-fought battle. Reagan Spencer, what a terrific job in the circle. I mean, she had a perfect game going to the fifth and just pitched a tremendous job. And they got to her a little bit. We made a leadoff walk and an error. And, you know, Georgia Tech's a very good team. And they capitalized, but Reagan got us out of that inning, and that was huge. Millie came in and shut the door, and just so proud of our pitching staff. Coach Jameson does a great job with them, and they've just been phenomenal, and they keep getting better as the season goes on. Early in the game, Valerie with the big hit that gets us a two-run lead, and like I said, Georgia Tech came back and tied it, but really loved the way we kept battling and executed in that last inning. I think, you know, huge for Sam and Ariel to get down those bunts. And then Maddie Moore, what a terrific job. You know, she's had a lot of ups and downs this season as a freshman, but she's just persevered through it. She works really hard at what she does, and so happy for her to get that walk-off hit. Such a clutch hit for her. And just really proud of our team on senior day to have a great win.
John Rittman, 100 wins in Tigertown in 130 games. What an incredible start to that program. That program, it has been tremendous. 803-450-0086. All right, one final note here. Let's see. 00 says, Swanee, you failed to mention 00 taking in the 87th pick of the third round. San Francisco 49ers as the towel. Old man with a cane. He says, Jerry and the Falling Stars wanted to give a second-round pick and a seventh-round pick for the 87th pick in my option of services, but he was in the room with DeBartolo when Jerry Jones called to tell him, and he told him to tell Jerry Jones, I'm not interested. See, 00. You know what, 00? You might be a third-round pick by the 49ers, but you're number one in our hearts, buddy. Number one in our hearts. Again, thank you for hanging out with us here on a Monday afternoon. A lot of fun talking about your Clemson Tigers. And again, we look forward to being back with you here tomorrow. The NBA playoffs will continue. Certainly full coverage of your Tigers over on ClemsonSportsTalk.com as well. And don't forget about our trade special. 3 months for $1 going on right now. Go check it out, ClemsonSportsTalk.com. You can sign up today and help support us. After that, after your 3 months, it'll be 63-17. Gamecocks love it. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, as always, y'all take care now. And go Tigers!